A Christmas Carol to Read Aloud by Charles Dickens, as condensed by himself and even further, much, much further, in fact, by Thomas Hutchinson. Act One, Marley's Ghost. Once upon a time, upon a Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house.
Merry Christmas, Uncle.
It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew.
Bah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Out with Merry Christmas. If I had my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding. Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way, and I will keep it in mine.
Keep it, but don't keep it.
Leave me alone then. Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you.
I have always thought of Christmas time as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Good afternoon.
I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word, but the clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in.
Hello, at this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make myself merry at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help support prisons, walls, and workhouses. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
But many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, then they'd better get on with it.
The hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern and went home to bed. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door of this house, except that it was very large. And yet Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face with a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. As Scrooge looked at this, it was a knocker again. He said, and closed the door with a bang. The sound resounded through the house like thunder. Bang, bang, bang. Every room above and every crack in the wine cellar's merchant below, bang, appeared to have a separate peal of echoes. Bang, bang, of its own. Scrooge was not a man to be frightened by echoes. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and up the stairs. Up Scrooge went, not caring a button for its being very dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in, double locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus secured against surprise, he put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap and sat down before the very low fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment and with a strange breath that as he looked, he saw the bell begin to swing. Ding, ding. Soon it rang out loudly. And so did every bell in the house, ding-a-linging along. This was succeeded by a clanking noise. Clank, deep down below, clank, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain. Clank over the cask in the wine merchant's cellar. Then he heard the noise much louder. Clank on the floor below, then coming up the stairs. Clank, then coming straight towards his door. It came on through the heavy door. Clank, and a specter passed into the room before his eyes. And upon its coming in, the dying flame leaped up as though it cried, I know him, Marley's ghost.
What do you want with me? What do you want with me? Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who were you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
The ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace as if he were quite used to it.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them. You may be just a bit of undigested beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There is more gravy than grave about you.
The spirit raised a frightful cry.
You see, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Why do spirits walk upon the earth? Why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is commanded to do so after death. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me in life, my spirit never roved beyond our money-changing hoy and weary journeys lie before me.
Scrooge was very much dismayed to hear the specter going on at this rate and began to quake exceedingly.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance of hope of escaping my fate. You will be hunted by three spirits. Expect the first tomorrow night when the bell tolls one. Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has casted to vibrate. Look to see me no more.
Tried to say humbug, but stopped at the first syllable. And being from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, he went straight to bed without undressing and fell asleep on the instant. Act two, the first of the three spirits. When Scrooge awoke, the church clock tolled a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy bong. One. Light flashed up in the room upon the instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn aside by a strange figure, like a child.
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you then?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood in the busy thoroughfares of a city. It was made plain enough by the dressing of the shops that here, too, it was Christmas time. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
Know it? I apprenticed here, and I didn't get fired.
They went in. At sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting behind such a high desk that if he had been 2 inches taller, he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement.
Ooh, old Fezziwig. It's bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again. Fezziwig.
Yo ho there, Ebenezer Dick.
A living and moving picture of Scrooge's former self, a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow apprentice.
Yo ho, my boys, said Fezziwig. No more work tonight, Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here.
Clear away? There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away or couldn't have cleared away with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. The warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book and went up to the lofty desk and made an orchestra of it and tuned like 50 stomach aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In they all came one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came anyhow and everyhow. And away they all went, 20 couple at once, hens half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round, old top couple always turning up in the wrong place. When the clock struck 11, this ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig, shaking hands with every person as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas.
A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude. He spent but a few pounds of your money, 3 or 4 perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?
It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things that are impossible to add up and count. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it had cost a fortune. Spirit, remove me from this place. Haunt me no longer.
As he struggled with the spirit, he was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further of being in his own bedroom. He had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep. Act 3, the second of three spirits. Scrooge awoke in his bedroom. The walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove. The leaves of holly, mistletoe, and ivy reflected back the light of such a mighty blaze that went roaring up the chimney. Heaped upon the floor to form a kind of throne were turkeys, geese, great joints of meat, pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, great bowls of punch, and immense 12th cakes. Upon this couch, there sat a giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch.
Come in, and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. You have never seen the like of me before. Touch my robe.
Scrooge did as he was told and held it fast. The room and its contents all vanished instantly, and they stood in the city streets upon a snowy Christmas morning. Scrooge and the ghost passed on, invisible, straight to Scrooge's clerks. And on the threshold of the door, the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with the sprinklings of his torch. Then up rose Mrs. Cratchit.
Whatever has ever got your precious father then, and your brother, Tiny Tim?
No, there's...
cried the two young Cratchits, who were everywhere at once. In came Bob, the father, his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
As good as gold and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful, sitting by himself so much, and thinks the strangest things you've ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he thought the people saw him in church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember, upon Christmas Day, who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Master Peter and the two young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they soon returned in high procession. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy, ready beforehand in a little saucepan, hissing hot. Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the hot plates. Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner at the table. The two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody, not forgetting themselves, and crammed spoons into their mouths lest they should shriek for goose before their turn came to be helped. At last, the dishes were set on and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it in the breast. But when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight rose all round the board. And even Tiny Tim, excited by the two young Cratchits, beat on the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried. But now, the plates being changed by Miss Belinda, Mrs. Cratchit left the room alone to take the pudding up and bring it in. Mrs. Cratchit entered smiling proudly with the pudding like a speckled cannonball, so hard and firm, blazing in half a half a quarter of ignited brandy, and bedight with Christmas holly stuck into the top.
Oh, a wonderful pudding!
At last the dinner was all done. The cloth was cleared, the hearth swept, and the fire made up. Then all the Cratchit family drew round the hearth while the chestnuts on the fire sputtered and crackled noisily. They were happy, grateful, pleased with one another, and contented with the time. And when they faded and looked happier yet in the bright sprinklings of the spirit's torch at parting, Scrooge had his eye upon them, and especially on Tiny Tim, until the last. But the whole scene passed off, and he and the spirit were again upon their travels. Much they saw, and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. Suddenly, as they stood together in an open place, the bell struck 12. Scrooge looked about him for the ghost and saw it no more. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. Act 4, the last of the spirits.
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen. Will you not speak to me?
It gave him no reply. The hand was pointed straight before them.
Lead on. The night is waning fast, and there is precious time to go. I know. Lead on, spirit, lead on.
They scarcely seemed to enter the city, for the city seemed rather to spring up around them. But there they were, in the heart of it, amongst the merchants. The spirit stopped beside one little knot of businessmen. Observing that the hand was pointed toward them, Scrooge advanced to listen to their talk.
I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead.
When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
What has he done with his money?
I haven't heard. Company, perhaps. He hasn't left it to me. That's all I know.
The scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bare, uncurtained bed. A pale light, rising in the outer air, fell straight upon this bed, and on it, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of this unknown man.
Spirit, let me see some tenderness connected with the death or this dark chamber. Spirit will be forever present to me.
The ghost conducted him to poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire, quiet, very quiet, The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in needlework, but surely they were very quiet. The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face.
The color hurts my eyes. They're better now. It makes them weak by candlelight, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time.
Past it, rather. But I think he's walked a little slower than he used to these last few evenings, Mother.
I have known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed. But he was very light to carry, and his father loved him so that it was no trouble, no trouble. And there is your father at the door.
She hurried out to meet him, and Bob came in. His tea was ready for him, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Then the two young Cratchits got up on his knees and laid each child a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind it, Father, don't be grieved." Bob was very cheerful with them and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work upon the table and praised Mrs. Cratchit and the girls.
"Yes, my dear, I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is, but you'll see it often. I promised him I would walk there on a Sunday. My little child, my little child."
"Spectre, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me what that man was with the covered face, whom we saw lying dead."
The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him to a dismal, wretched, ruinous churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger read upon the stone of the neglected grave, his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
"Am I the man who lay upon the bed? Oh, no, spirit, no, no, spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year. Oh, tell me how I may sponge away the writing on this stone."
Holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. He was checked in his transports by the churches ringing out the lustiest peals he had ever heard. Bong, a bong, a bong. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist, no night. Clear, bright, stirring, golden day.
"What's today?"
cried Scrooge, calling down to a boy in Sunday clothes.
"What's today, my good fellow?"
"Today? Why, Christmas Day."
"Oh, it's Christmas Day. Oh, I haven't missed it. Hello, my fine fellow."
"Hello."
Do you know the poulterers on the next street around the corner, on the next street but one?"
"I should hope I did."
"Oh, a remarkable boy, an intelligent boy. Do you know whether they've sold that prize turkey in the window? Not the little prize turkey, but the big, big, big prize turkey in the window."
"What? The one as big as me? That one?"
"What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Yes, my buck."
"It's hanging there now."
"It is. Go and buy it."
walk.
No, I'm in earnest. Go and buy it and tell him to bring it here that I may give them directions to where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown.
The boy was off like a shot.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
Scrooge dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth, as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas present. And walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded everyone with a delightful smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant, in a word, that three or four good-humored fellows said,
"Good morning, sir. A Merry Christmas to you."
He was early at the office the next morning. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A quarter past. No Bob. Bob was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Bob's hat was off before he opened the door. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock.
"Hello, what do you mean by coming here at this time of day?"
"Oh, I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time."
"Yeah, you are. Yes, I should think you are. Step this way, if you please. Now, I tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand for this thing any longer. And therefore, I'm going to raise your salary."
Bob trembled.
"A Merry Christmas, Bob. A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have ever given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and assist your struggling family."
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but his own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. May that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
"Bless everyone."
And we wish you all a Merry Christmas.
Merry